Hi, this is Daniel Garber of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. For years, many Indigenous people have been trying to blend in, struggling to make it in a white world to be offered the same opportunities, to be treated equally in a court of law, and to receive the benefits that everyone else in this country is entitled to. Many have hidden their backgrounds because of the pervasive bigotry and discrimination they might face. But recently, there's been a strange reversal where white Canadians are trying to pass as Native. Whether it's for financial gain, as a fashion accessory, to find inner value, or to help their careers, they are a factor to be reckoned with. What are we to make of these pretendians? The Pretendians is a new documentary that delves deeply into the lives of some of these alleged pretend Indians, their opponents, and how it all affects us. It's made by the well-known novelist, columnist, playwright, and humorist, Drew Hayden Taylor, from the Anishinaabe Curve Lake First Nation. I last spoke with Drew about his CBC series, Going Native, which is about to start its second season. The Pretendians is currently streaming on The Passionate Eye on CBC Gem, and I'm very pleased to have Drew Hayden Taylor here with me via Zoom to tell us more about The Pretendians. Hi, Drew.
Hello, sir.
Thanks so much for meeting with me again.
Oh, pleasure, pleasure. I was glad to talk about Indigenous film and literature.
So, what is a Pretendian?
Well, you can tell in the name. It's somebody who pretends to be Indian, using air quotes. There's been several different variations of the name. Wannabes, race shifters. My personal favorite is Indigenauts. But Pretendians are just people who are non-native, who for one reason or the other have decided to put on the mantle, the cloak, of indigeneity and tell the world that they have Indigenous ancestry.
And can it be proven or disproven?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, traditionally within the Native community, it was basically there were three ways to claim your Indigenous heritage. One was to self-identify. Two was to have the community acknowledge you, and three, to be able to trace back your heritage to a particular location, like a community or whatever. And that used to be enough, but in today's day and age, it's not. And the other thing about it, too, is in many ways, it's a combination of nature and nurture. It's a combination of how much blood you have, and also, were you created, developed, and have you given back to the Indigenous community? So it's a complex issue. That's why we did a documentary on it.
In a column in the Globe and Mail from December 2020, you write, it's now fashionable to be Indigenous. So are there some people pretending to be Indigenous because it's in?
I think so. I mean, there's three reasons I think that why people go through this whole issue of pretending to be Native. One is it's always nice to belong to a group of people with similar beliefs, similar ideas, or are traveling on the same path. That's why people join the Boy Scouts. That's why people join the Army or join gangs or whatever, right? And also, being Native has a certain exoticism to them. And everybody likes to root for the underdog. And in many cases within Canadian society, Native people are viewed as the underdog when facing against the might of the Canadian government. So that's reason number one. Reason number two is money. A lot of people, by wrapping themselves in the cloak of indigeneity, can sachet their way into the two most dominant areas that you find a lot of Pretendians are the arts and academia. For some reason, that seems to be the feeding ground for Pretendians, and they can get projects, funding for projects, or they can get lucrative contracts and jobs in academia and the arts by claiming indigeneity. But pressing that discussion. You can get cheaper gas, cheaper cigarettes, better hunting and fishing rights. And also, like say for instance, you buy a car, and if you have a car or any large appliance or anything, anything delivered directly to the reserve, you can get it a certain amount tax exempt. So it's financially beneficial to some people to claim indigeneity. And last but not least, and this is one of the most common ones I find, family lore. Basically, your grandfather, your grandmother says, "Oh yeah, way back. I think it was my great grandfather was Cherokee, was Mohawk, was Cree, whatsoever." And that legend gets told down and down and down until it becomes part of the family lore, and people begin to wrap their identity around that story without bothering to check the authenticity of that story.
So let's talk about because I find it the most surprising one is the nickel and dime one, where there's a phenomenon in Ontario and Atlantic Canada where people are joining previously unknown or non-existent Métis and First Nation groups, seemingly just to get the ID card. What does that ID card bring them? How do they use them? You go through that in the film.
As I said, discount gas, discount cigarettes, appliances, the cars. I mean, one of the people we talked to is the chief of the Odinac Reserve in Quebec. And basically, you know, the people would drive up to the edge of the reserve. And like I've done this with my vehicle on my reserve. But I do it legitimately. You drive it, you take a picture of your car in front of the reserve sign, and you get it. I forget if it's just the PST or the HST or whatever. But yeah, so you're talking a couple thousand dollars. So people do that, get their card, and are actually greatly upset because they can buy this card from some organization, I'm using the term loosely, for a couple hundred dollars, and they expect to get all this stuff for free. But in this day and age, you know what's real, what's not real, and a lot of these Indigenous stores now have we accept these three Indigenous cards only, and they get really upset.
Okay, let's talk about you. And you've mentioned this in your columns and books and in the current documentary, that if you met a stranger, they wouldn't necessarily realize you're Indigenous by your looks. And similarly, your name, like many Indigenous people, is a European-sounding name. So I wonder, are looks a factor in who is considered Indigenous and who isn't? And have you ever been accused of being a pretendian?
Oh, yeah. I've been kicking around this business for over 30 years, and it's been an ongoing thing. Not so much in the last 10, 15 years, because I've managed to build up a reputation, an understanding. A lot of people know me, know my work. So it's not so much an issue now, but it was when I first moved to the city. And I was talking earlier about how, it's a combination of nurture and nature. Biologically, I'm half Native. My standard joke is I'm half Ojibwe, half Caucasian, so technically that makes me an occasion. As I like to say, a special occasion, if not a memorable occasion. I got blue eyes, so I do, yes, I do look what the term is, a white passing Indian. But I was just raised by my mother and my mother's family on the reserve. So basically, the only understanding, the only reality, the only world I know is an Indigenous world, is a reserve world. So I have that, which is more than a lot of other people might have.
One of the most famous or infamous pretendians in Canada's history is Grey Owl, who was a blue-eyed Canadian trapper and a noted conservationist in the early 20th century, but he raised awareness of environmental issues, the promotion of parks, a move away from the commodification of our natural reserves. But he was British. He was British born and raised. He moved to Canada as an immigrant, and he took on this disguise and fake name. So are pretendians like Grey Owl, are they on the whole a good or a bad force?
Well, I mean, there's nothing more personal to a person or a people than their identity. So when somebody comes in and takes your identity, it's not a good thing. As one of the characters in the documentary says, they're not just trying to replace us, they're trying to erase us. So when somebody does this, it's very, very disrespectful. But the interesting thing about Grey Owl, we actually had a segment in the piece that we had to take out for time. It was an interview we did with Armand Garnet Ruffo, a professor at Queen's, who wrote the biography 25 years ago of Grey Owl, Archie Bellamy. And it's been 25 years since it came out, and it's being re-released, and he was asked to write a new foreword to it. And he came up with a new interesting theory. And his theory is that Archie Bellamy / Grey Owl did not culturally appropriate Indian culture, native culture. Native culture culturally appropriated him. Because you have this older teenage kid from Hastings, England, who shows up in Canada having absolutely no idea what he's doing here. He goes up to Northern Canada, and he does not have the training to survive. So these people from the Temagami community take him in. They teach him to hunt. They teach him to fish. They teach him to trap. They teach him their language so that within a few short years, he was calling himself Grey Owl, and he had become indigenous, and I'm using, again, air quotes. But and all the native people knew he was white. They just thought he was funny. They just called him that crazy old Archie. So the theory is from Armand, whose family is from Temagami, again, repeating myself, is that Grey Owl didn't culturally appropriate native people. Native people culturally appropriated him.
Interesting. So about 2 years ago, Michelle Latimer came out with a seminal documentary called The Inconvenient Indian, as well as a really great TV series called Trickster. And in doing so, she gave a platform to and boosted the most important Indigenous artists, musicians, and writers. And on the TV series, she hired and mentored a huge number of Indigenous actors, technicians, designers, all of whom eventually lost the work when the series was canceled after she was accused of faking her Indigenous background. To me, it almost seemed like a Me Too incident where they caught her in this heinous crime, and so she was completely erased or canceled. Not erased, canceled. But in doing so, everyone associated with her in these projects also lost their work. So I'm not Indigenous, so I can't pretend to know the deep reaction that this spurred, but were the end results favorable or unfavorable? Like, how do you look at a case like this?
And it is very interesting. Well, with Michelle, I categorize her under the believing family lore. She had heard that her family were Algonquin from Gitganzibi, but they weren't. And so that's where she got herself burned. She was actually an actress in one of my plays that was in Thunder Bay. So I knew Michelle, and the whole thing was just handled so poorly that it was immediately canceled. Even though a lot of people said it was wonderfully produced, it was wonderfully acted. A lot of people liked the series, but it was immediately canceled because of the dark cloud over it. Even though, and people say the reason it was canceled and not revived is she, because she bought the property, the novel, had the rights to the television characters and could not be done without her saying so. So that's why the series was canceled, because they didn't have the rights to the television characters. There's reports that she was said she was more than willing to sell it to whoever, but I think the shine was off the apple by then.
Interesting. Finally, you also interview people who make it their mission to expose fake Indigenous people by using records and things like that. I think a woman from the Cherokee Nation is one of the people. That's Could right. you talk about these subjects in your film?
No, I think if I remember correctly, the name of the organization was the Tribe Against Fake Indians or something.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
The, something like that. And her name was Liana Costantino. And basically, it's an organization set up primarily for Cherokee, for people claiming to be Cherokee. But they also do other Native people who are other people who claim to be Native. It's an organization set up to do battle with fraudsters, with pretendians. They have a travel budget. They go and seek these people out. They do the genealogy. They do the name and family search, and basically come with all the proper documentation to basically shed the lights on who they consider to be pretendians. We don't have that up here, but it's really interesting that it's developed like that down in the States.
Drew Hayden Taylor, thanks so much for talking with me.
It's been a pleasure.
You can watch Drew's documentary, The Pretendians, right now on The Passionate Eye on CBC Gem. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.